On May 29th, 1999, Discovery became the first space shuttle to dock at the International Space Station. This was a feat many thought would never be possible. Yet, human spirit to strive beyond limitations won out. In this same year, a movie was released where the main character was asked to choose between the blue pill or the red pill. Neo chose the red pill, of course, and he woke up to a new reality. This week's guest chose his own path, just like Neo, but his was on a journey from a wheelchair to the NFL.
Welcome to the Football History Dude Podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. Your host is Arnie Chapman. Football is his passion, and he wants you to come along with him to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board his DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. Great Scott.
This time as we step off the DeLorean, the date is May 29th, 1999. We're here to witness, in fact, we're on the International Space Station kind of watching the Space Shuttle Discovery dock for the first time with the International Space Station. Kind of timely because just a few days ago, we saw the SpaceX team launched two American astronauts with American rockets from American soil to the International Space Station. Now Douglas, Hurley, and Robert Banken, they're up there floating around somewhere when you listen to this episode. If you listen to it at the release anyways, because they're only going to be there for a short time. They're going to come back, and we are going to launch the new era of space travel. But why bring this up on a football history podcast? Well, the reason is because 1999 and also the year 2020 are monumental moments for this week's guest. This week's guest is Leroy Collins. Now, he is a former NFL running back. He's also the author of a book chronicling his life, get this, from a wheelchair to the NFL. Yes, you heard right. He was in a wheelchair as a young child. Then he would fight through all these different kinds of obstacles to make it to his dream, the NFL. Just like we had to fight through all these different obstacles being taken away from the space program to be launched back again. Now we have our dream of going into deep space. That's a long ways off, but we have the right path to get there. And we kind of talk a little bit about that, not necessarily the space travel, but the whole going through different obstacles. You'll hear the term broken arrow a few times, and not that kind of broken arrow, but a different type of broken arrow, a path that winds, but always having that true star, that north star you're looking at, to guide you to where you want to be. And it all revolves around this book. The book is titled The Running Back, True Story from the Wheelchair to the NFL. And you better believe it, I'm going to go ahead and leave links to this book in the show notes, which you can get to through your podcast player or by heading to thefootballhistorydude.com, which will actually take you over to my page on the Sports History Network, which is the headquarters for your favorite sports yesteryear. Now, this is a network that's still at the very early stages, so if you know of a podcast that you think should be on this network, or even a YouTube channel or such, or even if you're looking to start your own history show about your favorite sport, team, or league, go ahead, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/contact. But let's get back to this impossible task. Jumping from a wheelchair to the NFL. Being told you're never going to walk again to carrying the rock for an NFL team. It just kind of takes me back to this past weekend again, where you have this impossible task of launching these humans from this blue little marble spinning around in the middle of nowhere, all the way to that atmosphere. But without further ado, let's just go ahead and get into this story. Talk about the entire life of Leroy Collins. Well, I had to bring you on the show because I saw a book as I was flipping through my internet pages there, and it kind of struck me a chord and something to do with a wheelchair to the NFL. And the first question I just had to ask is, of all things, when you're sitting in the wheelchair dreaming to play in the NFL, why was that your dream, and how did you come up with that?
Well, it kind of started when I'm watching a football game. You know, I was watching an NFL football game on TV, and I was actually sitting on the floor at the time, and I was watching a game, and I was just so intrigued by the sport. And I mean, I truly believe it was my first time ever watching football ever when I was a young kid, my first game I ever watched that I could remember. And I fell in love with the game. And then since watching it, I just wanted to play it. And, I always talked about it. I always dreamed about it. And, I always talked about it and dreamed about it. And it's just something that became part of me.
Yeah, it's something that, of course, many of us as children grow up. I don't know if you can see I'm wearing my Detroit Lions shirt. I grew up a very fan. I was going to be Barry Sanders still. I wasn't, because nobody else can be Barry Sanders.
Oh, no.
But, like, what players did you grow up listening or watching and enjoying?
Man, I love Joe Montana. Joe Montana was my favorite. Roger Craig, I just wanted to run like him. I just wanted the way he ran with his knees high and just so much aggression and just the way he moved the ball. I just loved that. And I actually wanted to be a San Francisco 49er. And I wanted to play with Roger Craig and Joe Montana.
So what was that your running style when you were in the league and when you were in high school and everything?
You know what? I try to manipulate it, because even though I had to develop my own style over time, I try to manipulate it at times, and I adopted a little bit of his aggressiveness and moves. But I kind of you know and you know created my own style as well that may be more elusive on the field. But yeah, so I adopted a little bit of his habits.
Yeah, and speaking of aggressive, I would say that you had an aggressive approach as to a dream growing up, considering your situation that you dealt with when you were younger. Let's go back in time and let's talk about that, the origin story of Leroy and how you went from being in the wheelchair to the NFL.
So when I was a kid, I got hit by a truck, and the truck hit me, it threw me 10 yards in front of it, and the truck continued driving and it ran me over. And my clothing got attached underneath the truck. So the guy, he realized he hit me, but you know, in shock or whatever, I was still being dragged down the road a block and a half until my clothes came unattached in the bottom of the truck. And then my body got ran over by the truck tires, the back truck tires ran over my body. And, I broke 14 bones in my body, and I was pronounced dead at the scene. I mean, I was pronounced dead at the hospital, and they brought me to the hospital, and then they revived me, and then I was in recovery. But I got hit by a truck when I was younger that broke bones and it left me in the wheelchair. The doctor said I'd never walk again and even be able to function on my own. But you know, through prayer, hard work, miracles, and it all changed one day.
So you said one day. Was it a matter of a specific event or thing that you can remember saying, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to walk?
The thing that really got me going is that once I had that dream, a vision of playing NFL, I wanted to play NFL. That was just like a passion of mine. And so I used to tell my mother, and my mother kind of told me, whatever you want, go after it. I believe in you. The doctor said that you'll never walk again, but I believe you can do anything you want. So it was kind of that struck something in me. And every night I used to practice to learn how to walk. I used to get up midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would practice. It's this hallway we used to have in our apartment that had the walls were closer to each other, so I can hold on to each side of the wall while I'm trying to take steps. And even sometimes that was still too difficult for me. I used to fall, get up, but regardless, I practiced all the time. And, you know, I just talked about it all the time and always dreamed about it. You know what I mean? Just always headed in that direction. And then it was one day that my mother used to always pray for me. She's always rub blessing oil on my legs. She'd always pray. I used to always hear her at nighttime when I get up walking. Sometimes she'd be praying at nighttime. I used to hear her praying while I'm thinking everybody in the world is asleep. But she's up praying for the doctor to continue healing me, because I was suffering for months. So this is months. This is like a course of months of practicing, learning how to walk. And then one day she put me in a bathtub full of water, and you know, she put a blessing oil in there like she always did, and she always did her prayer. But once I got into the bathtub, my legs stretched out. That's the first time that I can remember my legs stretching out to fully and without pain, because my legs, I was still bandaged up. It was like I was stiff in a crouch position, and I couldn't stretch out. And that was that day, my body literally stretched out and I stood up in the bathtub straight, first time ever in my life that I could remember, coming from the hospital. And I went out in the hall and I started taking my first unassisted steps without holding on to anything. And everything from there changed. I still had a limp. I still walk with a limp. I still walk, you know what I mean, uneasy, but I was able to walk unassisted. And that was my way of getting closer to the NFL. That's my way of saying I was closer to the NFL. So it gave me more power, more strength, more motivation to even work harder at a young age.
Was it a situation of those that supported you around you said, okay, he's going to shoot for the stars, so he hits the moon, or did they in their heart believe he's going to make the NFL?
You know what? It was more of a support, love from a family members. The doctor said that I never walk again, so they had nothing else to go off. But my mother was always, she's a faith. She believed in God, so she's a woman of faith. So she believed God, anything is possible through Christ. But nobody never really saw the NFL. You know what I mean? They heard me say it. They heard me say it. But it was like as clear as day to me. I wake up in my dreams crying sometimes because I can see myself making it, you know? So I can see myself waking up. Sometimes I woke up in tears because I actually made it to that point. I was so happy about it that it was like a clear picture to me. And saying so working towards it was like, it was like necessary, something that was supposed to happen. And I struggled with a lot of other areas of my life. But for some reason, that kept me back on that path to get to the NFL.
You had like that North Star. You had that shining beacon of something. I'm always going to head that direction kind of thing.
I was heading that direction. I got sidetracked. If y'all don't know, if you see this, I got a logo. My logo is, it's an arrow. It's a broken arrow. I don't know if you can see it, but you see that right there? That's my logo right there. That means it's not like success is not a straight arrow. Life is not a straight arrow. Basically what it is, that's a logo to represent my life because that's what it was. I saw the finish line. I set my goals at the bottom of that arrow, and I set my goals here, and I reached it up here. And I went through all this right here to get there. But I believe if I didn't have that goal, if I didn't have that vision, it wasn't so clear to me, and I had that much faith, I'm sitting in a wheelchair. And I'm thinking I'm going to play in the NFL. Now, everybody knows that you need your legs to play any type of football. And I'm a young kid in a wheelchair saying I'm going to play in the NFL. And I saw it so clearly. And it had to be something from God that's like, you know what? I'm going to give you something to get you out of this wheelchair because you got a lot more to do other than football.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting the chills just thinking about it because anybody that doesn't even have to go through the wheelchair situation is considerably out of their mind to think that I'm going to for sure make the NFL. And then you go through that struggle and then you get into high school. And I thought I saw somewhere at that time, were you the state rushing champion for New York?
Yep. So I had a New York State rushing record for a while. I still got a school record. I had a second, the touchdown record, the yards record. I was a couple yards away from having is another record I was a couple yards away from having. But yeah, I broke the New York State rushing record.
Yeah, that's cool that, again, going back from the wheelchair to breaking a record and then you get into college. How did that process go? Were you recruited or did you have to fight your way in?
Like I said, one of those struggles I was going through, one of those shifts in the arrow, I was in the special ed classes, so I struggled in school. School was like was my worst subject. So I just had struggles with dealing with education and that stuff, but I fought my way to get out of the special ed class to get back into the general public classes because I always said I need to get a Division I scholarship, and I don't think I can do it from the special ed classes. And plus, I thought there's more to life that I need to learn. So we requested to get out of special ed classes and then end up doing that. I struggled in school, but then I found the way to learn. I found the way that can teach me how to overcome adversity. When I had a car accident, I died for 8 minutes. I had brain trauma. So I had, my learning was slow behind everybody else, at least a year or two behind everybody. So if I'm in the ninth grade, my education level is at 7 because I couldn't catch up because of the way my thought process was. So I actually had to go to tutoring and counseling and different things to learn how to study and learn things like everywhere else. I mean, more than everybody else. And I put my whole heart and soul into that. And then I was able to graduate high school, and I got recruited by every school in the country. All right. And couldn't go anywhere. Couldn't go to Division I school because my grades were so bad. My grade wasn't so bad towards my end of my year, but I messed up earlier on that I played catch up for like 4 years of my high school, 3 years of high school. I played catch up. And I took the SATs. I mean, the SATs was something that wasn't really spoke about in our school because nobody ever went to Division I from our school. So it wasn't like, okay, take the SATs and go to school. If you weren't a student, studious student, they weren't talking about the SATs. And I mean, and I'm glad I changed that now, because now since I made it to the NFL and got a Division I scholarship, now they're kids that have somewhat of a talent in school and in high school, they're recommending them to study for the SATs and give them an opportunity to get a scholarship.
Did that, having to learn differently than a lot of other people, did that affect how you would consume a playbook, or was that different?
Playbook too. So anything a playbook, everything that I had to do, I had to do it over time. Like you might have to study 2 hours for a test. I'm studying 10 hours for that test. You know what I mean? So the playbook, so we will go to the play practice and while we're in practice, the coaches would give us the plays and learn the plays. I write the plays down and I go home and study the plays myself and learn it is. So now after I got it. It was just breaking down that barrier to get it in there. You know what I mean? Breaking down the wall. It can all seem jumbled up, but once it's in there forever. And that was the way it was. That was a process for me. And that was a lot with everything. I just needed time to get a chance to understand it. And once I got that, it was never leaving.
Did you have anybody that gave you any kind of techniques to try to overcome some of the challenges, or any teachers that you really said, man, this is the one that helped me, put me back on that one of these paths going back and forth towards my broken arrow top?
Yeah. My English teacher in high school, I always give her credit for something, because she's always one that always believed in me, always gave me that motivation, always gave me that, you know, you can do anything you believe. The same type of encouragement my mother would give me. But she always gave me that. But then it was a summer school teacher. And I was just talking, trying to remember the summer school teacher name. And a summer school teacher, a lady that was just in my path. She was one that was, I think, was sent to me. Because teachers that were teachers all around could not give me the lesson that she gave me. And I think she was, because she was just doing a summer school job, not part of school program, just a teacher there to fill in for a summer school thing. But she showed me and told me, Leroy, what you need to do, you need to rehearse, practice, and see, visualize and see everything that you're doing. You might be doing mathematics. You have to see math. You have to feel math. You have to understand. You got to do all them things with math. So it's the repeating things. It's repeat things, like it's reciting. It's affirmation. It's all these different things. So she kind of gave me that, just that gift to know this is what you need to do, because you're lacking behind in this and this and this. Never another teacher ever told me that before. They was like, you know, you should know this. Or you study this, you should know it. And she was one that got me. So I always believed that. I wish I knew who still knows who she is. Because when I was writing my book, I was actually wanting to interview her and talk to her and just like, you know what I mean? So I didn't even know even where to start, you know what I mean? Where to start, like to even look for her. But when I was writing my book, I wanted to talk to her and try to get the information that she gave me that helped me. Because I really didn't realize how much she helped me till like a year or two later. You know what I mean? So that's why I was kind of like somebody that came in, just gave me this beautiful gift and then went off. But I still believe that along my path, she was meant to be there because I need to learn something. I need to get beyond that part. And she was there. She was that person that was there to teach me. Like along my path, she was supposed to be there, like the car accident, the police officer. I don't know if you read, when you read the book, I would have been dead. I would have been here right now talking to you if a police officer wouldn't take it upon himself to drive me to the hospital, because the ambulance was already tied up in a car accident. So he brought me to the hospital in a squad car because he saw my pulse was weak and I lost a lot of blood. But by the time I got to the hospital, I was dead. I declared me as dead in the hospital. But when he first got me on the scene, he brought me to the hospital, and I believe he was there. He was the one that got the call and was one closest there to respond because he was sent my way. And I believe that he was the one that had enough courage to pick me up and bring me to the hospital and not wait for the ambulance. Because if the ambulance would have came, I would have the time they came, I would have died. I would have lost so much blood and it would have been over for me.
Yeah, we get a lot of signs in life, and we have things that come to us, and just like coaches too. Do you have, I don't know, maybe the best advice that you ever received from a coach?
So Coach Woody in high school, he's always telling me because I was so much faster than everybody else. So after a while, I became so much faster than everybody else. I used to always bounce it outside. I get the ball, bounce it outside. And so I did that in high school. It was so easy, and I could dominate. Nobody could catch me. I get them saying 2,000 yards. Got to college, you know what I mean? Still did in junior college. I went to Alfred State, so I still did the same thing. Bounced it outside. I cut up in the middle sometime, but mainly bouncing. When I got to Division I, it was a different story. I'm not bouncing anywhere because I bounce it. They're right there. So I had to learn to come up the middle, and I always remember the coach yelling at me, and his name was Coach Woody, and he always said, where you pulled to be. I'm saying that was his saying, not where you're supposed to be. He said, Leroy, where you pulled to be? You know what I mean? So, and I always heard, and I heard that years of after playing, I heard him telling me, go up the middle. And I'm saying, so after, you know what I mean, me feeling that I need to start going to the middle after I had a little epiphany, I remember him. He was a big part of my life, man. He was always that guy that gave me the most encouragement and told me. He told me, the only coach that I ever dealt with in Pop Warner, JV, or varsity, he's the only coach that told me. He said, Leroy, you're going D1. I said, Coach, I know I'm going to pros. He said, yes, you are. He's the only one that believed in me. He's the only coach that believed in me and told me I was going. Because nobody else in the area never saw it before because nobody ever done it. But he was one coach that said, I know you are. I believe in you. So, Coach Woody.
It's almost like that same constant theme of the broken arrow in the path. And he kept saying, you know, you got to get back on that path. You know, this is where you're supposed to be, kind of thing.
Yeah, where you're supposed to be.
So how did that, you know, going back to the challenges of, you know, after the brain trauma and everything, how did that help you prepare or maybe detract from you preparing for a game?
So it didn't. So the thing is that we always did is mind meditation. So basically you start to visualize, you paint the picture, you create the movie. You sit in close, you know, turn your lights off, sit in a closed area, close your eyes, and actually see what you want to do. And what made it so easy for us, we always knew the first 10 plays we were going to do. We knew, we rehearsed the first 10 plays we were going to do. So I actually got a chance, and plus I learned the plays. Once I learned the playbook, I learned it was good. But preparing, always you close your eyes and you actually paint the picture and create the movie of what you want to happen every time. So I know my first play, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to happen. Second play, this is what I want to do, what I want to happen. And I create that movie and always see myself doing those things. And now, you know, I say my prayers. I go back to my faith world and pray. And then I just go out there and make magic happen.
And this is something that I always wondered. When they always have like the script, you know, the 10 plays we're going to do at the beginning of the game, the 20, whatever it is, each coach might have a different amount of plays. Does that help players get into their rhythm at the beginning, or is it just a matter of we can kind of script it out at the beginning?
Well, it does, because what it is, because it's always good to know what you're getting into. You know what I mean? So, and I mean, and things change. You know what I'm saying? So they always say this thing, midstream adjust. So things change over time. So you always got to be able to midstream adjust because you know what you're supposed to do, but then it might change. So it was a good thing for players to get that first script, because now you know what you're getting into. Okay, bam, we're doing a pass play. Now you can communicate with the person that, okay, you're gonna do a dig out and up. And so you're gonna tell quarterback and go tell a receiver, okay, dig out and up. You're gonna come here, you see him shade on the inside, hit him hard on the inside, go to outside. So, you know, is that communication the beginning that actually give you power and advantage if it go draw up the way, if it happened the way you draw it up. But it gives you a little bit of chance to communicate and give the players a chance to know what they're getting into.
What was your favorite play to be called when you knew you were getting the rack?
Oh, man. You know what? I love the draws. I love the draw play. You know why? The reason I love the draw play, because when I get the ball, I draw, I get to pause, right, for a second. And what I get to do, I get to see everything. I saw everything. So I saw the people come in. I was able to slow the people down. I was able to slow them down. After I started, you know, like run, once I got the habit of running up the middle, I could slow the linebackers down. I could see him coming. I could slow him down, see him coming, and I could see him, know where he's at, and see somebody else. I'm like, okay, he's coming this way. And now it comes back to me. What should you do? You know what I mean? Why are they coming full speed? So that draw gave me that chance to pause, to see, to react. It happened so quick. You watch any of my highlights from high school, college, you'll see it's a work of art, man. Guys blitzing, and it was like they could never touch me, man. I was all over the place.
Did it ever feel like, I don't know if you've ever played any video games, but there's those times where it's like it kind of goes in slow motion and you kind of have that field. You can see the entire vision, then it goes back to speed and it just goes. Do you ever get that feeling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it's in the zone. So the one thing I love it when I get that person that rush in, because like I said, my brain, it reacts different, and it's not just me. There's a lot of athletes out there, but it registers things really fast when you're under pressure. So if you're under pressure, so if guys sit back there waiting, it's harder to make that move around them to create something if they're sitting there waiting, you know. But if they're moving at you, putting pressure on you, now your brain registered, okay, boom, now you got to go into the zone. Slow that runner down and then do something about it. And so I love the pressure. I love the pressure coming at me, man. And I can make things happen when it gets to that point.
I wonder if that's has to go back with the way that, you know, are neurologically wired. If some people are more geared towards, like you said, when I get under pressure, I go, you know, the fight or flight, I guess you could say, then I can versus I kind of freeze. And then maybe that's what separates some of the from the, hey, I'm going to make it kind of guys. And speaking of make it kind of guys, you made it to the NFL. Of course, there were some challenges there too. Did you go to the scouting combine? Were you invited?
Well, see, look, and that's the thing that happened. So, yeah, as you read my book, you read into it that I ran into some stuff because I was a junior on the football field. I was a senior in class, so I was supposed to graduate that year. So I actually I was a junior on the football field. So I made myself eligible for the draft. All right, and saying so while being eligible for the draft, I was you have to be selected. No, your coach have to sign you in. You have to be selected by the coaches, all right? So if you're a senior, the draft selects you, but the coaches and me making my selection to go to the pros, the coaches didn't like that too much. So my name got thrown in the dirt, and then my accident came back up. I'm a red flag now. I might have brain trauma. I mean, I'm one hit away from an accident. So all these things was coming up about me. The accident happened when I was a kid, but they was bringing it back up, and it was like I said, I can't really say, but because I don't have a strong enough proof, but I know that good things weren't said about me going into it, because they wanted me to stay for another year, and you know what I mean. So going into it, I was 24 years old. I was a single back offense, so I felt it was the right time for me to go. And I was being selected as a high draft pick, like a number one draft pick, top draft pick. So not number one, but you know, top first round draft pick. So I'm being selected first round draft pick. So why isn't a good time? I'm top in the country, top running back in the country, number two in the nation, rushing touchdowns, top 10 in every other category. Why isn't a good time? You know, and I'm a senior. I'm one of the oldest going into the draft. And nope. So then my name got thrown in the dirt. The teams had to ask my coach, and the coach obviously said no. And said, so we even had a pro day at our school, and I wasn't even invited to my own pro day at Louisville.
Huh. So I don't know anything about any of the back behind the scenes stuff when all that happens.
Yep. I had a pro day at Louisville, and I wasn't even invited to I had to create my own private workout. I only got a chance to work out for an NFL team one time, and I was four NFL teams one time before the draft because I couldn't go to pro day. I couldn't go to he wouldn't put me in the NFL the scout. I was the top running back in the country. I mean, I couldn't go into the scout, the scouting combine, and I didn't go to another pro day they had. So they got a chance. So I had to make a private workout for them to come see me, and it was like four teams there, and that was it. I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, I hope I get a chance. And Miami was still going to pick me up. They thought they were going to pick me up in the first round, and then they have not drafted me at all. So it was like, I got picked up by the Redskins. But it was tough during that time. It was awful. It was awful because it seemed like everything I worked for, all the promise, everything that was supposed to be, that was already laid out, it was supposed to be, just got destroyed, just got burned up, just got buried. You know what I mean? So, and it happens like just like that.
Yeah, it's almost like it felt like the rug was pulled from under you. You're back in the wheelchair again, and it's like, how do I? I've already overcame this once or twice actually because of the other things. How do I overcome it again? I mean, you ended up signing on with the team after. Was it the Redskins at first, or?
Yes, I was the Redskins. I was the Redskins for about 3 months. And the training camp, I made it to the last training camp, and right there almost broke me. The Redskins situation almost broke me. It almost destroyed me. I mean, it almost took me out again. You know, I was this is devastating. This is actually my second book. I'm writing my second book, but I'm gonna tell you anyway. You'll get it. I was we had a game against New England Patriots. Oh no, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers. We had a game against the Steelers, and I had a great game that day. Awesome game. And it was during training camp. So I had an awesome game. I went out there, rushed for a lot of yards, almost scored a long touchdown, broke a couple of tackles. And I was considered the star of the day of that game. So I'm like, man, this is easy. The NFL, this is easy. Gave me a chance I'd do something. So the next week we go into the practice on Tuesday, and they still going doing their cuts. And the guy they call the Reaper, goes around and, you know, get the guys and tell the guys that, you know, coach want to see you. And then, you know, you're cut. Usually you're cut or you're getting a signing bonus, whatever the case is. So I go into the building. I run to Norv Turner. So me and Norv Turner's having a conversation. We're talking. And then we're talking. I'm like, okay, how you doing? He say, yo, you did a great job in the game. You did very well. You played well. You played hard. I can't wait to see you next time. Next, I can't wait to see you next week. Next week, I'm gonna, you know, see you again, and I'll see what you do. See what you can do. I can't wait to see what you do, basically. And I'm just excited. I'm like blown. I'm that happy. I'm getting ready to go downstairs in my locker room, go in the locker room, and change, and get ready to go call my mother to tell her, Mom, we made it. We did it. We did it, Mom. You know what I mean? And I mean, 10 minutes later, while I'm getting everything going, the address, I get a tap on my shoulder, and the Reaper. He came and said, Coach, he said, Leroy, Coach want to see you. I said, I just saw Coach. I just saw Coach 10 minutes ago up in the hall. He said, yeah, I know. He told me to come get you and bring your playbook. I'm like, what? What the heck going on? I just talked to Coach. He told me I did an excellent job. He told me I can't wait to see me next week. So bring my playbook. So I grab my playbook. I finish getting dressed, get my playbook, going to see Coach. He walking by his office. He said, come on in, take a seat. And he apologized. Leo, I'm sorry. He said, we're going to have to let you go. You're in a bubble. I'm like, you're going to let me go? We just had a conversation. He said, yeah, I know. He said, when I got to my office, there's a list on the desk. Your name's on a list for the guys that need to be released today. I had my plane ticket and everything all set. And I got released, and I ended up walking out of the building that day. Instead of telling my mother that, Mom, we made it, an hour later, I'm being escorted out of the building.
So that's like a roller coaster of emotions. And so that kind of brings me to kind of the point of how does the man in charge not know what's going on? Is it all the positional coaches that make those decisions or?
No. It came down from up top. I'm saying like some coaches don't have a say. Like Norv Turner had no clue. I believe he had no clue that when I saw him in the hallway that I was going to get released. I believe that the numbers came from upstairs because Daniel Snyder was a new coach at the time and he controlled everything. You know what I mean? Daniel Snyder was controlling everything. The GM controlled everything. You know what I mean? It's like I think Norv Turner was just – he was a coach. He was a good guy. He was a good coach, but I don't think he had no say in anything. So when he got to his office, the list of people had to go, and my name was on the list. And I just had a conversation about to tell my mother, Mom, we made it. We did it.
Man, that's just go, like you said, the roller coaster of emotions and hearing it from the head coach who in theory should be the guy that this, okay, I made it because the head honcho that just makes the decisions and then you get that other. And after that, what team did you cling on with later? Because I thought I saw you in a Jaguars jersey.
Yep, so I was Jaguars. So I went to Jacksonville Jaguars. I was Jaguars for about a year and a half. I was on their practice squad. And I was always, every week, I was always close to getting signed. They always kept me on that bubble, like, Leroy, stay by your phone. Or it was like the most annoying thing ever because it's like, stay by your phone. We're going to call you. Stay by your phone. You might get a call. So this is like every weekend before a game, I'm that guy that almost going to get a call. And saying, so I just never got that, you know, that bump up to the actual roster. But then, you know, a year later, I ended up getting released. And after I got released, I was, I was always fighting to get back into a team. And then I ended up going to Canada and with my agent and trying to get back into the States from Canada was just a nightmare. And that didn't work out good. I had teams that couldn't sign me, that wanted to sign me. I couldn't sign me because I was owned or I was under contract with the CFL for 2 years. When I thought it was only about a year, but it was like 2 years I was under contract with them. So that was just devastating. That's another thing. I was like, why did I sign a 2 year contract? My mission was to come in, but they wouldn't release that. And so I ended up going to the XFL too. And then XFL didn't work out, you know, and then, you know what I mean? But then after all that was all said and done, I realized why I had to take that trip to the NFL, to the disappointments. I took all those trips, and that's actually the title of my second book, is like, was it really about football? Was it really about football? Because it goes into talking about like what I'm doing now, how I'm inspiring now. My book came out, what is it doing to people's lives right now? How kids are overcoming adversity, how kids are not committing suicide because they believe they have another chance, that hope is on the other side. Just mothers that I'm saying knowing about giving their kids the encouragement and drive that they need, and you know what I mean. So it's just so much that this book is like doing, and I mean like was it really about football? No, it was about football. It was about everything that we do in life. That I realize in life, it's not about us. It's about somebody else. No, it's about somebody else, man. And that's what football didn't happen. I did all these challenges. I was always. And I wasn't like I was just on a team. I wasn't never just on a team. I was always the top on a team. I was always the top guy on a team. I was always the person that gave it everything I got, running sometimes. And I mean, I still got scars on my arm here, on both arms, like even right here, that I ran through the gauntlet. I said I wanted to get better at the NFL, so I went out and ran to the gauntlet, so I pulled the flesh off my arms. Both arms, I got both had my arms bandaged up. Just, you know what I mean? I always did that extra. And it was something I was conditioned to. And then when it wasn't happening. I'm saying, you know what? And then the CFL was like kind of the last straw for me when all that stuff went down. And that's when I say, you know what? That, you know, there's something else that I should be doing. You know what I mean? And I didn't give up on football because another team would have called. I would have, you know, went for it. But I started helping people. I started training people. I started helping people. I started motivating people and start doing things that's going to advance people around me. and it gave me the drive. So I had the drive I had inside, I was able to give to other people, and I was able to get them to the next level and help them get them over the hump and have a conversation with a person. It's like, you know what? There's a fire inside of you that you didn't even get a chance to touch. Let that go and touch that fire, man, and go out there and do anything you want to do in life. And people are doing it, man. And like I said, that's what it was all about, man. I don't think I would have went that far, did that, if I went through what I went through. And I got the Dream Collection. That's my clothing line is the Dream. I got the Dream Collection. So I go talk to kids all over the country and tell kids the dream. Don't forget the dream.
Yeah, and speaking of telling kids to dream, you've gone through all these years of challenges and going through that broken arrow. If you could go back and you could tell yourself, your younger self when you were in that wheelchair, what piece of advice or what would you have told yourself?
I think I would have told myself to document like everything clear, because there's a whole lot of stuff that I've been writing this book, man. So I'm like calling all over the world, everybody that was ever relationship or family member to write this book. If I know right now where I'm at right now and where I would have, I mean, about where I'm at now, where I came from, if I known that I would be doing what I'm doing now, I would have told myself, document everything, write everything down, take more pictures, do this, do that. That's what I would did, because, you know what I mean? There's a lot that I went through, and just to thought my mindset, the way I thought, man, the way I was just thinking, it's like I was one of them, like not arrogant, but not stubborn, thick-headed little kids. I just saw something that nobody else saw. You know what I mean? And I mean, I was like, I can see. I wake up in the middle of the night crying because I see myself running using my legs. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't walk, but I saw myself running as a little kid around the neighborhood, and I saw myself playing football in the NFL. And I mean, and I'm, you know, it's like getting out of walking, you know? So that was just a joy in itself, because I wasn't able to do it for a long time.
So then why did you end up writing the book, this previous one? And then why are you writing the next one?
Yeah. So now that's the, I always wanted to write a book. I always wanted to do it, and for some reason that I always started, like for like last 10 years, I always start the book and then I stop. I always start and stop, because what I did, I put this thing in my head and thought myself that this book was too big. It was too big because of the time frame, the patience, the sitting around, the, you know what I mean, all this different stuff. Just thinking, I put a demand on it that it shouldn't have been there. So I always wanted to reach people, always talk with people. People always say you should write a book. I always wanted to write a book. And then it was up to last year is when I actually said, I kept failing at writing this book. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to read a book from cover to cover. So it was January. It was December 2016. I made a New Year's resolution to myself. And I said, January 2017, I am going to read a book from cover to cover. All right, I'm gonna read the book from cover to cover, and then that was my new resolution, because I never did it before. I never read a book. I always read books. I'm in college. Just to say, I have a master's degree. I went to college. I did all this stuff, but I never sat and actually read a book from cover to cover. So I told myself I was gonna do that, January 2017, and I did it. I started opening up. I start reading that book. Open up. Start reading. From cover to cover, I finished that book, opened my second book, opened my third book. And then after I finished my third book, I started writing. And once I started writing, I never stopped. I just kept writing. I was so like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, like the same thing with the wheelchair. We're trying to walk again. I used to get up. I used to write in a book. My wife would look over at me and she'd be like, what you doing? I'm saying 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, babe, I can't sleep. I'm writing this book. And it was just coming to me. And then I, just tracking people down, like, okay, I need to talk to the doctor. Okay, we'll talk to this person, talk to the lawyer, I need to get information from everybody. And, you know what I mean? So that took time, but I was relentless. But it was thought I had to write this book to touch people. But then the second book, reason why I was saying I'm going to write everything in the first book, and then I stopped writing it. And then something told me, get it published. You know what I mean? So I had a lot more to write to get it published. You know what I mean? So I went and got the book published, and then, you know what I mean, the book's just been selling like hotcakes. It's actually become a movie.
Oh, really?
The book is actually is already scripted right now to be a movie, and we'll start with The Arrow, another break in my plan. In the plan, the book is scripted to be a movie, and this summer they're going to start shooting a movie of the running back this summer. But the coronavirus happened, paused everything. Unbelievable, you know what I mean? But like I said, I learned how to handle the adversity, man, and just like this, give them another chance to make this thing greater. Because now I see the number one sports movie in the country.
And that's what you're going after, right?
I'm going after number one. I keep telling myself the number one sports movie in the country. And I tell everybody that for my belief, you know what I mean? That make it manifested into something real.
So when that ends up happening and when they're actually able to start it in production, does that mean that you'll be involved on the day-to-day, or is it more of a strategic level?
No, it's, I won't be involved, you know, because, the contract that I got, we actually still work mapping the contract out. I didn't get it signed yet because all this stuff that's happening, my lawyer's in Albany. So I ain't even really get a chance to even go see them to go try to get that, to get all that stuff done yet, because I knew they closed everything down. So how it seems that I won't be directly involved, but I will have a say in the, like, they'll come back with a new script. It's like, hey, this new script, we're going to do some stuff. So they come a new script. And so I have a saying, like, okay, you know what? Let's not do that. Let's do this. Then they say, okay, we want this person acting, do the actor in here. And like, oh, I don't know if I want that person. So that's the say I have. Like, I'm saying, I don't want that person acting. Could you get somebody else? You know what I mean? So that's as far as I go. Like, I want, you can't have a non-actor. I mean, you can, but you want to have the movie to be, you know, have somebody in there that, you know, that know what they're doing.
Right.
You can't pick a person because they are running back, because they ran the ball, they know how to play football. You know, a person that know how to act and play football. You know what I mean? Somebody that's what I want the movie to be, like one of the best movies in the country.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that when that comes out. And maybe I can be a bystander. I can be the dude that you run over or something like that.
Absolutely, man. I mean, that's what I wanted. See, the thing I wanted my boys to play me as a younger years. I got a 6-year-old. I got a 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 12-year-old. So I wanted my boys to actually play me growing up as a kid, you know what I mean? And car accident and all that. But they want to. They's like, they don't know if they have an opportunity of getting like Denzel's nephew.
Right, right.
They're going to get Denzel's nephew because there's so much money involved. They got so much money involved in this thing. So they said that they need to, the actors they get need to be big. So I wish I had that say to say, you know what, I want my boys to play me. Well, my boys ain't good actors, so well, at least not yet. They can practice.
Sure, I feel you there. But so I had Vince Papale, who is the movie The Invincible with Mark Wahlberg. I had him on a few episodes ago, and his daughter and son were both in the movie, but they were more like the extras. Like, the one daughter ran across in front of Mark Wahlberg and the son did something else too. So same concept, but again, they weren't the actors. So
Yeah, I know. That's what I want. It'd be so awesome. They play big. They all look like me. So
well, I hope everything worked. You know, I mean, unfortunately, everything's been backtracked, but you've dealt with that your entire life. And speaking of, I'm looking at the shirt again, dream. Let's dream in a different way. I'm going to give you the virtual keys to my DeLorean. You can go back in time any point in NFL history, and you can be there present for one moment. You can't change the outcome, though, because that's kind of cheating. We know what happens there in the movies. What moment are you going to?
In the moment in football?
You can go to a moment in a football game. I've had some people tell me they wanted to shake a hand of a World War II veteran. I've had some. It's like totally open-ended.
We had a game against the Carolina Panthers. Again, the Carolina Panthers. And it was third and 14. And the coach called my name. I'm getting the ball. Third and 14. I get the ball. So he gave me the ball, and as soon as I touch the ball, a guy rushes in and grabs my leg, shake him off, and then I go. And when I was running, I'm just wishing I put my hand down. The guy hit my shoestring. I can say an 80-yard touchdown. The guy hit my shoestring. I could hit my toes, and I was going to put my hand down, and I didn't put my hand down. I dove instead of putting my hand down. I would have had a touchdown. That right there, I already had the most yards that game as a running back, but I would have – I think I had the most yards. I think I had more – I think I, Fred Taylor probably had more yards, but he had more carries than me. I think I had a better average. But I dove instead of putting my hand down. I wish I would have went back and put my hand down because that ate me up for a long time. Put your hand down. Keep it going. And that's something that Woody taught me. Woody always taught me. Walter Payton, put his hand down. Walter Payton, put his hand down. Because he was like, you know, he's like, Walter Payton really never came out and liked to go out of bounds. And Walter Payton always put his hand down to get that extra yards. And I was thinking about that put your hand down, Collins. So if I go back, that right there would have been it.
All right, so I'll make an exception. You can do one outcome change. You can tell yourself to put the hand down. We'll go with that.
Okay.
All right. Well, Leroy, I do appreciate you joining the show. Very inspirational. I'm going to leave a link to the book in the show notes, and then we'll be forward looking for the upcoming book and the movie in the future. Is there anything else as far as any kind of advice you'd like to give to the listener of the show?
Yeah, just never give up, never quit. Things may not seem like it's possible. It may not seem like it's going to happen. But the thing is that the key is functional dreaming. If you believe it can happen, functional dreaming, meditation, affirmation, and do the work. If you follow that process, you follow those steps, you can make anything happen. You can make anything happen. Now, I just said, when I had the dream from a wheelchair, I didn't know that I was doing that. I was functional dreaming. I had no idea I was functional dreaming. But then as I got older, I realized that I can have anything I want. I just got to continue being consistent with it. So whatever you're doing, be consistent, stay with it, never quit, and always believe.
How about that incredible journey from an individual that just kept getting beat down by life? Then he decided to pull himself back up multiple times, and he gave us some words of wisdom for our own lives. Like he said, it wasn't just about football. I mean, I think we can all learn and be inspired from this. And speaking of inspiration, I think there are so many different stories throughout the yesteryear of your favorite sports that I had to start this Sports History Network, a collection of podcasts and other shows dedicated to reliving and retelling some of the lost or forgotten sports stories of the past. If you want to learn more, you can head over to sportshistorynetwork.com. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com. But for now, dudes, I'm through if you're through.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Football History Dude. To make sure you're the first to get the next episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice and head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com for the show notes and more information on the history of the NFL. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads.